The national conventions are just around the corner. All week, we're going to look at potential vice presidential picks. And today, we'll begin with Florida Senator Marco Rubio. No doubt, Rubio is on Mitt Romney's short list for VP. He's charismatic, Latino, a Tea Party favorite in a battleground state, and that could all be attractive to the Romney campaign. But Rubio also comes with a little baggage, including some misleading statements about his Cuban parents' immigration to Florida. Washington Post reporter Manuel Roig Franzia recently released his book, The Rise of Marco Rubio, and he joined me to talk about Rubio as a potential VP pick.
I don't think there's any question that he's a high risk, high reward choice. Great speaker, super dynamic, talks in English and in Spanish equally well.
Convincingly, yes.
Convincingly, attractive, can reach a lot of people outside of the Hispanic community. A lot of people don't realize that he's incredibly popular with conservative, white, Christian evangelicals because religion is a big part of his focus. At the same time, there's some danger. Danger is that he's had some questions raised by myself and lately others about the story that he had given about his family's migration from Cuba.
He says they were escaping Castro.
Right.
That's not necessarily the case.
It's not true. There's no real ambiguity about it anymore. This is something I came across just doing basic due diligence, early stage reporting, looking up some immigration records.
And they left Cuba for economic reasons.
1956. 6 months before Castro even invaded the island, 2.5 years before he took power. The weird thing and what's really fascinating about that for me is that their story is the story of millions of migrants who come to the United States who aren't Cuban.
Yeah.
Mexicans and Central Americans who are coming looking for a better life. But in South Florida, being pushed off by Castro has a certain resonance.
Oh, that is a cachet, absolutely.
You're a member of a special group of people who have suffered, and it's palpable on the streets of Little Havana, and it cannot be underestimated how much that means. It's a wound that's still raw and still open there.
And we're actually speaking to the man who broke that story originally, Manuel Roig Franzia, Washington Post reporter and author of the new book, The Rise of Marco Rubio. You know, in response to people asking him if he made fictionalized parts of his memoir, Marco Rubio said this to USA Today. Exile is not a time frame. It's an experience. It's a sentiment for my parents. It's the very real pain of being permanently separated from the nation of their birth. And he says he didn't know the real details of his parents' story until he started researching his book. And he says, I should have known. However, he said, it's ultimately irrelevant when they fled Cuba. Is that correct? Do you think it's ultimately meaningless?
Not based on the interviews that I've conducted with many, many people in Miami. Not based on the emails that I've received from people who came over to the United States, forced off of the island through the Pedro Pan program, in which children were separated from their parents. I've received many, many emails from people who said that they felt hurt and offended, and that they felt that not...
Hurt and offended that he seemed to have been not forthcoming.
Yeah, absolutely, because their experience of being forced off the island was so painful and traumatic that it was painful for them to hear someone lay claim to that without actually having experienced it. Now, no one will dispute that people who are of Cuban ancestry and live in Florida or anywhere else in the United States and feel they cannot return to Cuba, whether they came before or after Castro, are also experiencing the trauma of exile. But when we're talking about Senator Rubio's story here, we're talking about telling an accurate story about your family history. And it's relevant because he has a large voice in America right now on immigration policy. And his own family history has to be placed in context with the positions he takes in the public arena.
There's a couple things that are immediately associated with Marco Rubio that if when you read your book, you realize probably are not accurate. The first, of course, is Tea Party King, right? Why does that not really fit him?
When you first heard about Marco Rubio, when he first burst on the scene, it was as if he had risen whole cloth from a town hall meeting.
Right. Reagan struck his staff onto the ground and up rose Marco Rubio.
Tea Party invention. The truth is completely different. Marco Rubio was an establishment Republican foot soldier from a very, very early age. He was a county manager for the Bob Dole presidential campaign. He ran for city commission. He ran for the Florida legislature. He ran for the Speaker of the House. It's a step-by-step-by-step careful rise. That's not to diminish in any way the extraordinary accomplishment, but it's a little bit different than being struck by lightning and suddenly becoming a politician.
And that also is what kind of refutes the other assumption about Marco Rubio, which is that he's a political outsider. Your book describes him absolutely as none. In fact, this is a man who not only correctly identifies the right people to know, but is a master at fostering these relationships with the right people in politics.
Yeah, after learning more about his history, I came to think of him as an apprentice. In fact, I came to think of him as almost a professional apprentice, almost as if he was an LBJ-type political figure who was able to identify people who could give him a boost up to the next level. One of the really important mentors is Jeb Bush. Jeb Bush was an extremely influential, extremely powerful, extremely effective governor of Florida. And he spotted Marco Rubio, this young legislator, and he said, "This guy's got promise. I'm going to get him on my team."
But you've just mentioned two political figures. LBJ, of course, turned that ability to foster patrons and to identify the people who are really of influence. And then you mentioned Jeb Bush. Now, Jeb Bush, of course, is on everyone's minds right now because he came out swinging. He actually came out against the Tea Party and the Republican Party, saying they may have swung too far to the right. Is he the sort of far right wing part of the Republican Party that Jeb Bush has a problem with?
He appealed to that wing in order to get elected. He needed
well,
to appeal to
them. Almost all GOP candidates do, but I'm asking what he's really like.
I think that he's trying to move back to the center. He is talking about changing the tone on immigration. He brought up the possibility of an alternative DREAM Act, which was limited and did not have a path to citizenship. That is a way to potentially rehabilitate himself with Latino activists. Remember, in Florida, they had great hopes for him, the Latino activists, because he had been supportive of their cause. And then they were greatly disappointed when he came out in favor of E-Verify, when he came out in opposition of the DREAM Act, and really when he said that he would have voted for the Arizona Papers, Please law. So finding a way to talk to those voters would be a way for him to raise the possibility that he would be helpful to a Mitt Romney or to another candidate down the road who might want to link up with him.
All right. So do you think in the end Mitt Romney will go with Marco Rubio?
I think anybody who tries to make that prediction is on a fool's errand.
Be very careful, Manuel Roig Francia. Washington Post reporter, his new book is called The Rise of Marco Rubio. Thank you so much.
It's been a pleasure.